Dip, 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 dip. Sha-la-la-la, sha-la-la-la, puddle. Sha-la-la-la, sha-la-la-la, puddle. Sha-la-la-la, sha-la-la-la, puddle. Sha-la-la-la, sha-la-la-la, puddle. Dip, 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 dip. Good evening. This is the Labor Exchange, and I'm Dennis Kreese, a member of the Boulder Area Labor Council, AFL-CIO. The subject of tonight's program is an update, political issues for senior retired Americans. And with us, as before, a very special guest, Ed Ogden, President, Colorado Alliance for Retired Americans. Ed, great to have you back here at KGNU.
Well, great to be back here with you, Dennis. I think I appreciate the opportunity.
Ed, let's do a couple background questions to as we always do. And as in the past, could you detail for this KGNU listening audience your journey as a union teacher with Denver Public Schools and then being the union president and now president of the Colorado Alliance for Retired Americans?
Okay, so I originally joined the AFT as a student in 1966 when I organized a chapter of the Student Federation of Teachers up in Greeley in Colorado State College. Then I became a full member in 1968 when I was hired to teach in Denver Public Schools. I was elected DF, Denver Federation of Teachers President, Local 858, in 1977, and I served till around 1980. Then I helped to found an organization called the Denver Area, was first called Denver Alternative, now Denver Area Youth Services. And I served with that organization, served as treasurer, vice president, then president. And then I became active again in the labor movement about 10 years ago. And in 2013, I was elected from AFT to the CARA Board of Directors, and then a year later, elected president. I'm now in my second two-year term.
All right, then. Ed, who is the Colorado Alliance for Retired Americans, and what is its ongoing mission?
Okay, well, you know, we are affiliated, of course, with the National Alliance for Retired Americans. And that organization came into being about 2001. It was preceded by the National Council of Senior Citizens, and that's the organization that actually successfully lobbied for the original Social Security, I mean, it's not Social Security, but expansion of Social Security and Medicare.
All right, then. And how many members are there in the state of Colorado? Yeah. You're doing good with that.
Yeah, we're not, I don't have an exact number. Bob Knapp has an exact number. It's kind of difficult for us to get exact numbers from the various locals. So, but we have thousands of in the state of Colorado. There are about 36, I think, well, exactly 36 state chapters throughout the United States. Now, what we've been trying to do is expand beyond the Front Range. So we're going to go a little bit farther south. Next month, on July 12th, we'll be meeting in Colorado Springs. Now, we have a healthy working relationship with the ARA, and our ongoing mission is to represent and advocate for the interests of senior citizens in various ways, such as holding public meetings that we feature speakers and elected officials in particular, lobbying. We lobby at the state capitol during the legislative sessions. That's about basically what we're doing.
All right, then. And next month, I'll have the executive director for the Alliance for Retired Americans, Washington, D.C., Richard Fiesta, on to get into some more detail, particularly on the federal level, what's going on there with issues that affect us, particularly like with Medicaid, Medicare, and Social Security. So with that said, Ed, let's get into the Colorado Legislature 2018.
Very good.
The 120-day session of the Colorado State Legislature concluded Wednesday, May 9th, 2018. With that said, how active were you, other officers, and members of the Colorado Alliance for Retired Americans at the state capitol during this session?
Well, Dennis, as you know, I missed quite a lot of the legislative session because I was convalescing from injuries I suffered in a fall on January 1, and it took me about 2 or 3 months to get back down there. But CARA was well represented by our chief lobbyist, Mona Moffat, and many others, several others down there. When I returned in April, then I was better able to follow and evaluate specific bills. And of course, what we do is contact legislators by phone and letters on those bills we are think most relevant to seniors specifically and labor in general.
And in you and others within Colorado Lines for Retired Americans did testify on various bills, you know, related to senior retired Americans in the House and Senate committee hearings. Is that's pretty much ongoing practice, right?
Yes. Yeah.
And in addition, and you already mentioned it by phone, could you discuss maybe just a wee little more detail the lobbying efforts with these elected legislators?
Well, you know, we'll make specific contact, especially on those bills that we're going to talk about, some of those here today, that we think are really important to seniors and to labor, and you know, to seniors specifically and to labor in general, because we're part of labor, and we want to represent their interests as well, because their interests are our interests. We've been we get down to personal contact by telephone and by letter, and usually we send those letters by email, so that it's easier for them to get. If they get a letter from through the Postal Service, they may not look at it. So it's kind of interesting phenomenon, but that's what's happened.
You know, let's move on to this. Is it, you know, and I know the answer, and I know you do, too, because Mona Moffat sent this to us both email, but I was going to ask you, how many bills did the Colorado Lines for Retired Americans Lobby Committee monitor? And we both know now it was 173, which I think is phenomenal.
Yeah.
You know, that's so much work in 180 days. But with that said, how would you evaluate the overall effort by the Colorado Lines for Retired Americans and other senior lobby groups during this session?
You know, I think generally speaking, we were successful. But as to our effectiveness, it's really hard to judge. You know, if you take Senate Bill 200, for example, the PARA bill, we were only able to mitigate the damage.
Okay.
And I think the damage is going to be great, especially with the COLA restriction. I mean, the COLA freeze.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that in a little bit here.
All right.
Because I want some more detail on that.
Okay.
But in other words, you did the best, and you know, but there's always more to do.
Always more to do. Yeah.
But let's move on to this in terms of the state legislature, the Colorado Alliance and Retired Americans, and the Colorado Senior Lobby, and it's Bob Epstein is the head of that. Is that
right?
Correct? That's right, and a great guy. But you both, you work together on the passage of bills that will benefit all senior retired Americans. At this point, the governor has signed 10 bills that will assist and help senior retired Americans. So as before, could you discuss and explain the content of some of these bills? And I just put down four of them. And I'll start with, you know, and again, just a sentence or two will be good enough. House Bill 18-1256, Sunset Continue Civil Rights Division and Commission.
Okay. That's kind of a convoluted answer I'm going to have to give you here. But this related partly to the recent Supreme Court decision ruling regarding the Lakewood baker who refused to bake a wedding cake for a gay couple. The original decision by the Colorado Civil Rights Commission focused on describing the baker's attitude and behavior. Okay? When the High Court ruled, its decision focused on the language used by the Colorado Civil Rights Commission, not so much the merits of the case. So, this resolved, so House Bill 1256 resolved that and focused on the language used and related issues, and then restored funding for the commission. And it finally came out to be a bipartisan effort. It was very partisan because the Republicans really wanted to get rid of it, but it didn't work out that way. That's where that is, I think, right now. Is that
that's good
an
enough.
Adequate answer?
That's great. That's a great answer. It's more than I knew. House Bill 18-1284, Disclosure of Prescription Costs at Pharmacies.
Right. Well, that requires pharmaceutical companies to disclose the cost of prescription drugs at pharmacies. That's the way I understand it. This is an advantage for seniors, of course, because they will be able to get more information about drug prices.
In other words, if it's too much, they can go someplace else and do a little shopping and,
that's true.
And do some bargaining.
Yes.
And then not just save a little money, in some cases maybe save a lot of money.
Right, right.
So Senate Bill 18-270, Behavioral Health Crisis Transition Referral Program.
Mm-hmm. I don't understand that too much. I know that it basically establishes a statewide transition program for high-risk individuals. It'll coordinate referrals, and an appropriation was made. And I'm of the thinking that this may have been the first time such an appropriation was made. I don't know.
Well, so, and it, you know, definitely stuff like this, behavioral things affect seniors, and that and there's more funding to address that. That's a good thing.
Yeah.
And the last one I have down here, I just picked ones out that, you know, were, I think, I know we're helping senior retired Americans, House Bill 1128, and that was protections for consumer data privacy.
Right, that's what it does. It adds some protections for, and I tried to get to the bill today, but I couldn't get to it and really read the details of it. But it does, it takes that, adds a level of protection for consumers in terms of their data, and keeps that data more private. And that's, of course, that's a good thing. And just recently, the Supreme Court just ruled that, you know, on a similar issue. I don't have it right in my head right now, but I know that it was an expansion of privacy rights for people with cell phones, I think it was, wasn't it?
Yeah, and the whole thing is, too, is that, you know, with this bill, we both know we don't want seniors or retired people, like the both of us,
right,
to be victims of predators.
Exactly.
That have extra data on us.
Yes,
And they're trying to weasel their way into our life to basically steal our money.
Oh, yeah, of course, yeah.
And I have a special...
That's a better way to put it, Dennis.
Yes, that is a better way to put it.
Yeah.
So, this is the special question for you, because I know you're very passionate about this, and we've talked about it.
Yes.
And it's the Colorado Public Employees Retirement Association, also known as PARA.
Right.
So, Ed, what will be the impact of Senate Bill 18-200, the PARA bill, on existing retirees and future retirees with the passage and signing by Governor Hickenlooper?
Well, as you know, one of the things is going to be is the COLA, the cost of living allowance, is going to be frozen in place at zero for 2 years, and then restored at 1.5%. Now, this comes at a time when the cost of living is about 2%. So we're, you know, I mean, it keeps rising about 2% each year. So we're going to take a hit. We're going to be at a disadvantage.
And I think it's actually the inflation rate's up to 2.8%.
Yeah. And so, I said this before, and I would not endorse this bill personally. And so I said it's another way to kick the can down the road. It fails to address the major issue of underfunding that this state's been doing for too many years. Yet underfunding is also the principal reason why our schools and other infrastructure are in need. Major need of repair. And so we've just gone, all we've done is kick the can down the road. And what we have to do, and you should have on, by the way, I'd recommend that you bring on Carol Hedges from the Colorado Fiscal Institute to talk about Tabor, because Tabor is at the issue, if the issue is at the base of this underfunding.
Oh, yeah. I've, with different guests in the past, and, you know, we've talked about Tabor and, you know, the taxpayer bill rights, and we both know it's really, really bad, and it's been bad for, it's getting up on almost 30 years, you know,
right,
since it's been passed. But just to finish up this, you know, PARA bill, Ed, what might have been a better solution to address the serious issue of unfunded liability with this PARA, Public Employee Retirement Association, retirement fund?
We've got to go back and start restoring funding for the other issues that I mentioned as well. That's where we are. And if we don't do that, I say you got to address Tabor. If we don't do that, then we're going to continue on the road down we're going because of the ratcheting effect of Tabor.
And so it's going to be, and you know, you're a teacher by trade, and you're collecting a PARA retirement.
Yes.
And so it's going to impact you personally.
Right.
And others like you that are a little older, maybe, and those younger, but those that are getting ready to retire, you know, it's going to present some challenges for them.
Right.
And some of them may have planned to retire, but they're going to delay their retirement because of, you know, what they might expect.
Right.
So, Ed, at this point, and I'll get right back to you. For those of you who've joined us late, this is the Labor Exchange, and I'm Dennis Kreese. a member of the Boulder Area Labor Council, AFL-CIO. The subject of tonight's program is an update, Political Issues for Senior Retired Americans. And with us, as before, is a very special guest, Ed Ogden, President, Colorado Alliance for Retired Americans. So, Ed, at this point, I'm going to digress from the content of our show just briefly, but I know you want to talk about it too, and it's the Colorado primary election, which is tomorrow, Tuesday, June 26, 2018. So with that said, why is it absolutely important that all retired senior Americans in Colorado, especially those who are union members, to vote in this election?
Well, that's very simple, Dennis. Your vote is your voice. Without voting, you have no voice. And so if you haven't already voted in this election, and we know many, 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 many of you have not been there, you could still fill out that ballot and get it in. But this time, of course, you're going to have to take it in personally. It's no long, it's too late now to mail it in. So you need to just get that vote in. That's what makes the difference. The more votes we have, the more people vote, the less corruption I think there is in government.
Exactly. And I'll again note, at this point, if one has not voted, that voter needs to, quote-unquote, hand-deliver their mail ballots to their respective county clerk's 24/7 drop-off ballot box, or during office hours, just bring it into the office and give it to them. Under no circumstances, do not mail. It is too late. Well, Ed, that's our, teacher background lecture to our students out there in that context. So let's begin with these three areas like we always do. Medicaid, Medicare, and Social Security. So, Ed, okay. Let's begin with Medicaid.
Well,
what is Medicaid, and how has it been a major benefit for millions of people in the lower socioeconomic class?
Well, without Medicaid, which, as you have just basically described, is a lifeline for disabled and the disadvantaged, those most in need would have no care and would suffer, maybe, and die, and some of them do die. And here we have Trump showing, I think, his disregard for those most in need by trying to cut off food stamps.
Yeah, and that's the next question. How will Trump's plan to slash food stamps and Medicaid inflict, and I have this big letters and quote-unquote major misery on millions of poor people, especially elderly, single women, living on very meager fixed incomes?
Well, they're already having a tough time. The grocery prices are going up all the time, as we know. And so if they get cuts in their Medicaid or Medicare, then, they're not going to be able to buy those groceries. And if they can't buy their groceries, they're going to be suffering from hunger. And if they suffer from hunger, they're going to be even more of a problem for the state. So it's better off to take care of them when we can.
And it could be their
the moral thing.
And it could be their shelter too, where they're living. While they may be in possibly some government protected housing and that, those prices go up sometimes according to inflation.
And that
presents another problem as well. But I'm really emphasizing and know that you, and, you know, I'm going to call you out in a good way, and like I know it's Frank Lay and Ken DeBay and some of you others, have really personally went to some of these rental units, apartment buildings that do have elderly single women who are living on as much as only $600 a month, and you've delivered food and done other stuff to help them get by on a regular basis. So, you're a union member, they are too, and people need to know that.
Well, thank you. And we do what we can. And of course, our resources are limited. So therefore, we can only do so much.
All right, Ed. Let's move on to this, Medicare.
Mm-hmm.
So let's continue the education process with Medicare for this KGNU listening audience, especially our new and younger listening members. So let's begin with the basic. What is Medicare? And how has it benefited millions of older Americans since it was signed into law by President Lyndon Baines Johnson on July 30th, 1965?
Right, yes. Goes back a long time, doesn't it? Well, as you say, it was established as a safety net for older Americans so they could access health care. And it's a huge success story. I mean, we've made life a lot better for older people that would have otherwise suffered. Now, Republicans want, through various schemes, to privatize it. Or they want to make block grants to the states. In either case, that's going to be mean cuts for seniors. And, you know, especially if they privatize it, I think that would be a disaster.
Yeah, and that was it, the next question, and maybe we can expand on that and just throw some things out here, is that how will Republican proposals in the U.S. Congress, which there are now, undermine Medicare and then subsequently hurt those on Medicare?
Well, it's through their privatization schemes, primarily, I think. That's going to be the worst part of it. If they can privatize it, then they, you know, you go to vouchers, for example, then they will be able to start cutting those services.
And the one thing we both know, we've gotten emails from the National AFL-CIO collectively, you and I, you know, and others are union members, but also from the Alliance for Retired Americans, is that one of the proposals cut from the Republicans in Congress now is about a $1.5 trillion cut to Medicare. And I think another $500 billion, which would add up to about $2 trillion, for Social Security. And we both know where that's going at, is because with these huge tax cuts that Trump made, they're projecting, deficits of $2.1 trillion.
Yeah.
So they're trying to screw us, get after, senior retired people and, cut things. But for right now, I don't think it's going to happen. But because I think even many Republicans that are up for election in November, if they're sitting on the bubble, I don't think they're going to touch this with a 10-foot pole.
That's, well, I think you're right, because many of those Republicans represent districts that have a lot of senior citizens. Florida, for example. There's a lot of retirees in Florida and Texas, Arizona, and those places. And those are red states. But yet, I don't think I think you're right. They're not going to be able to do this just because of those realities.
Well, the reality is, too, is that, while you mentioned, those red states, but every state, every congressional district, regardless of which party represents them, in Congress, Democrat or Republican, they all have a lot of senior retired Americans, because that's how our demographics are shifting here in the United States.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Between now and 2020, American will be retiring every several seconds, I think it is. And every American American turns 65. And so that's going to continue. And so the graying of America is going to continue for several years down the road.
Ed, let's move into this. We have about 5 minutes left. And again, you always do a good job with this. Social Security. As before and again for this KGNU listening audience, especially our new and younger listening members who we love and we want to educate, what is Social Security and how has it benefited millions of older Americans, many others as well, since it was signed into law by President Franklin Delano Roosevelt on August 14th, 1935?
Okay, well, it is the main source of support for millions of Americans. Without this, they would be on the streets, or they would be living with their sons and daughters. It was originally, it was originally funded only for widows and orphans. So it was, just considering now what it now covers, today it's much more expansive in providing a pension to those who pay into it, and if you're doing that, and I think it's still going to be there, because they've had so much success in getting rid of defined benefits plans that is going to be the only thing left for these young people. And if they are following what's going on, they know they need to get involved. They know they need to contact their representatives and to have that pension in place for them when they become 65. So we are not the last generation to retire.
No, and you mentioned defined benefit, and that's versus defined contribution. Defined
right.
Benefit really means you have a pension that's guaranteed every month based on your employment. And, you know, the private sector, particularly in the non-union sector, have done, you know, like you said, a great job of getting rid of it and transferring people over to defined contribution. But you and I both know that's a finite, you know, pool of money. So sure. In other words, people can draw upon that for whatever reasons, and bingo, they're out of money and they still got 10, 15, 20 years to live. And then
right. They
go like,
right.
I got a problem. So Ed, what, you know, let's just to finish up here, is it what past and present attacks with this great program continue to possibly cause harm to all senior retired Americans?
What attacks, you say?
Well, you mentioned one earlier about Medicare privatization.
Right. Well, the privatization, that's the major thing. I think that we privatize public services, we get the short end of the deal. And the people of wealth get the best end of the deal. So I think this it's fighting that privatization.
And the big culprits and evil spirits behind that are in New York City on a place called Wall Street.
Yes, exactly. Right.
They want, you know,
the bankers.
The bankers and they just, you know, they're foaming at the mouth to get on that fund, and it's been going on since the first term of the Bush administration.
Right.
You know, they floated this out and thinking, you know, trying to sell people, particularly young people, the ones, you know, we're talking to tonight, you know, in a very respectful and positive way, and we want you to know about this, is that, you know, when you have things like that and you have a market crash net, all of a sudden, bingo, your money disappears.
Yeah.
And then how do you get it back? You know, one thing too, Ed, you know, I think, you know, we've talked about this in the past, and how this particular fund, Social Security, could easily be, you know, it's good from the most recent report to 2034. But I always call it the quote-unquote scrap the cap. You know what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, I think the cap is $128,000, and then anyone that makes more money after that, they don't get any Social Security deduction out of that. And I just think that's horrible.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, what are you going to get for $128,000? So you're absolutely right, and I think we've got to keep pushing.
I think all economists and other people I've had on the show, you know, not beyond yourself, but Richard Fiesta and everything, know that if they got rid of the scrap the cap, this thing about what they're projecting and all the scare tactics about, you know, Social Security is going to run out of money, that just disappears immediately.
Immediately, right.
And you not only have enough money to take care of the benefits for the people collecting, but future beneficiaries, but also with a big raise and extra benefits for people that, you know, like with disabilities and other stuff like that.
Yeah.
Well, as always, you do your homework and you do a great job. So we got about, you know, about a minute left. So do you have any final thoughts or comments for this KGNU listening audience in the context of tonight's subject, update political issues for senior retired Americans?
Right. Well, my final thoughts are what we've discussed here today ought to provide enough evidence for all folks, retired or not, to get involved and become knowledgeable on the issues. And that means, of course, making sure, if you haven't already done so, vote this primary election and then again in November, because that's where we hold these guys accountable.
All right, then, Ed, thank you. And thank you again for being on Labor Exchange at KGNU. And if anybody has any comments about this show or any other show on KGNU, please call 303-447-9911. And next week, Monday, July 1st, 2018, please listen to La Lucha Sigue at 6 p.m. This has been Labor Exchange, and I'm Dennis Kreese for KGNU Community Radio.